Hey kids, thanks for joining me. This is Rish Outfield and you're listening to the Rish Outcast. I'm not in the car right now, which I think should make this a, what was the other show called? The podcast that dare not speak its name. But no, it's still the Rish Outcast, and today we're going to be presenting the third part of Birth of a Sidekick. And originally this was the final section. I recorded three episodes, figuring three sounded like a good number, and we could break it up equally that way. However, once I went to edit it, I discovered that, you know, episodes one and two would be about a half hour long, but episode three would end up being an hour long. And so I had a little bit more material for episode, and I thought if I broke it into four pieces, they'd all be about the same size. And so that's what I'm doing. So here's a little introduction for episode three. It's not the final one, but it is picking up where the last two left off. Once again, if you haven't heard that, please go back and listen over on my blog, rishoutfield.blogspot.com. And feel free to go buy the story if you like it. And if you don't want to buy something you've already heard, just let me know that you liked it, and we'll probably do this again. I'm always very, very far behind in my release of these episodes, usually several months, just because there's so many other things that I ought to do that I need to do. So by the time you're hearing this, I already know what you guys thought of the first two episodes, and I've probably recorded a couple more Rish Outcasts that, you know, will happen sometime in the new year. But here you go. Enjoy, if possible. Thanks.
Birth of a Sidekick. Narrated by the author. As they rode out of Trueno, Ben could sense the gunslinger's excitement. This was how he made his living, how he made his legend. And it was obviously fun for him, because he was talking a lot, sounding a bit more like the lean rider in the stories. Benny had to push Pony to keep up with Winchester. Right now, Cook was detailing how they would catch the outlaw, explaining exactly where you can shoot a man with no chance of his bleeding to death or being in no condition to ride.
"You wouldn't want him to be too hurt to dangle, am I right?"
"Right,"
Ben said, though he didn't really see the difference.
"Sometimes the only way to get an outlaw's cooperation is to shoot him. So you'll want to get him in the foot, or the hand, the ankle or the arm. A graze to the side works, but you gotta be a good shot. They have to be able to spend at least one night in jail, unless you know a marshal's nearby that'll string him up as soon as you arrive."
"Okay."
They reached the outskirts of Antelope Valley late in the afternoon. Cook was still in his teacher mode, talking like Father Orejon reading from the Bible.
"You know, I think I saw Segovia in a bar once, though it might have been his brother. That was right before the stampede thing, so there wasn't no point in bringing him in then. Just a low-level cattle rustler, a drunk and a fool. Wants to be a bandito, but doesn't have the courage for it. There's a lot of his type around."
"You said this was an easy catch?"
"Oh, yeah. $200 for his arrest or his body. I'll walk you right through this one."
"Are you sure? I could practice cooking and not tying while you..."
"Nah, you'll learn more by my side. I'll tell you when to stay down if there's danger."
Ben wasn't very reassured. He hadn't anticipated being by the gunslinger's side when he caught the bad guy. He imagined it would be like their stop in Trueno, with Ben far out of danger. Of course, Cook made it sound like there would be no danger for him or for the boy. If so, then why hadn't the local sheriff gone after Segovia, or a nearby ranger, or the Pony Express rider? A sour feeling sprung up in Ben's gut. He didn't know what it meant, or where it came from. They'd eaten corn and rice right before leaving town, but it wouldn't go away. Cook seemed to pick up on this and decided to get his mind off the task at hand.
"Benny boy, do you play the harmonica?"
"No, sir."
The rider tisked, disappointed.
Every sidekick has to play the harmonica.
Really?
That's the rule. Even Gonzales, the future preacher man, knew a few tunes, he said. Tell you what, when we bring in Segovia, in addition to your bit of the reward, I'll pick you up a harmonica in Tueno. What you say, kid?
Say? What could he say? He would be getting a bit of the reward for bringing the criminal in? And a harmonica?
It sounds great!
He grinned big, thrilled and excited. This was better than he could have imagined.
Gracias, Senor Cook!
De nada, kid, the cowboy said, happy at the boy's reaction.
Antelope Valley was not very impressive. First off, it was barely a dip in the plains, and secondly, there wasn't an antelope in sight. Only a pair of scrawny jackrabbits that glanced up from the weeds they were chewing and went back about their business. Cook pointed to a scuffed area in front of the boy.
You see those tracks?
Ben only saw dirt, but nodded.
That's a mule, not a horse. Our man Segovia.
Ben felt the spit dry up in his mouth.
Is he a big man? This outlaw?
Cook shook his head.
Big drinker is all.
They rode a little bit further, and then dismounted again. Ben left Pony beside Winchester, hoping she wouldn't run off. The sky was darkening behind them, and Cook signaled for the boy to be quiet. He followed him down into the valley for a ways, then froze when he heard a mule braying. It sounded dangerously close. The rider looked back at the boy and gave him a reassuring nod. Just over a ridge the sound had come. Cook began in that direction, even slower now. He still had not drawn his pistol. Ben wanted to stay where he was, but at the same time he wanted to stay near the gunslinger. Making up his mind, he darted to the man's side. Cook was hunkered down, peering over the sagebrush. Ben did the same. There was a camp set up, but it was the most basic imaginable. A couple of sticks pushed into the ground and a ratty blanket draped over them. A rudimentary tent. A circle of rocks with twigs thrown on it. A pathetic campfire in the making. A mule tied to a Joshua tree. A scuffed pack. A nearly empty bottle. And a stained hat. It was Segovia's camp. Without the Segovia. Jerome Cook frowned and looked toward the sun. There was a mix of orange, red, and purple in the sky. Ben guessed maybe a half hour more of daylight at best.
Okay, we'll head back up the hill, the rider whispered, rising. Then we'll scope out a good place to wait for...
He turned, but didn't finish his sentence. A man was emerging from distant bushes, yanking the damp front of his pants up and wobbling as he did so. Moises Segovia was staggering back to camp. Extremely drunk, even for him. He seemed to be singing to himself. But it could have just been a series of belches.
Bushes!
Cook hissed at Ben, and Ben dove for the nearest cover, his heart hammering like a steam engine. The rider stood to his full height and took a step forward, drawing his pistol in a fluid move. Before Ben's very eyes, the lean rider said those famous words from the magazine stories.
Mo's Segovia, I'm here for your hide. Whether you stay attached to it or not is up to you.
Segovia groaned.
Ay, Dios jodeme.
The drunken man's hand moved slowly to his stomach, and he bent over even slower. Ben's breath caught in a hiss, and he ducked down even further, sure Segovia was going for a weapon. Cook glanced at the boy.
Relax. The poor comadreja is just dry-heaving.
But Cook was wrong. As Segovia straightened, he had a tiny pistol, a derringer, in his right hand. He fired it. It was still light enough for Ben to see it all. Time slowed down as the boy watched. Segovia had not aimed, and the shot wasn't even close. But something uncanny happened. The bullet struck a rock, ricocheted, and flew upward, right into the lean rider's throat. Cook went down, firing as he did so. He still hit the drunk in the arm. Such was his skill as a gunslinger. But then he was on his back, a combination gag and gurgle coming out of him. Segovia stumbled over, muttering something in guttural Mexican,
and dropped to his knees in front of Jerome Cook. He reached out, wrenched the writer's pistol away from him, and shot him in the head with it. The noise Cook had been making immediately stopped. Still crouching in the bushes, a mere 5 yards away, Benny's breath went out of him, as surely as if he'd been slugged in the gut. Segovia pulled himself to his feet, using the stolen gun as a crutch, and looked around for the boy.
"Come out, muchacho," he spat. "I saw you over there."
Ben felt tears come to his eyes, and he began to rise from his hiding place. Suddenly, Segovia was shooting, Cook's pistol sounding even louder than before. He fired twice, and Ben was surprised to see the drunk was pointing in the wrong direction.
"I get you, boy?"
Segovia asked. When no response came, he fired again, the barrel aiming more for the stars than the ground. As he'd been described, the man was indeed a drunken idiot. But he had killed the lean rider. Ben finally caught his breath, his throat imitating a frog as he swallowed. The outlaw still held out his gun, looking at it confusedly, as if it had done something completely different than he had intended when he pulled the trigger. Gull, the man was a sight. Around the time Benny realized he should be running away, the shooter seemed to understand what he had done, and that there were still more bullets to be fired. He turned the pistol outward again, ready to shoot at the first sign of movement. Many thoughts seemed to come across Ben's mind in one moment. First was, the lean rider was dead. His face was halfway in the dirt, his mouth and eye open like he was eating the ground. Second was, that ricochet was one in a million. Third was, Benny wouldn't become a sidekick now. Fourth was, he had to get out of there. Fifth was, it was too late to get out of there. Last was,
soy yo perro, para que vengas a mí con palos.
That was strange. Benny placed the quote in his mind as he saw Segovia raise the pistol again. It was from the Bible, when little David confronts the mighty Goliath.
Am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? The giant says,
offended that a child, not a champion, stands before him. Ben took it as inspiration. He couldn't really see the ground around him, but he had felt the rocky terrain before under his shoes. He reached beneath and behind him and pried a fist-sized rock out of the dirt. Segovia was scanning the bushes around him now, and had just about turned in Ben's direction. Right before their eyes met, Ben stood up and threw the rock as hard as he could. The rock almost missed Segovia, only glancing off his left arm. Luckily, however, it was the arm Cook's pistol had hit earlier, and the drunken man howled, clutching at it with his gun hand. Ben was already feeling for another rock. He found one and stood again. He threw the rock, putting more aim into it than force this time. Well, it didn't sink into the big man's forehead like the Bible story, but it did get him clean in the eye. The outlaw said, "Gah!" and dropped the pistol to cup his injured face. He actually dropped the pistol. Segovia staggered back, and Ben gathered his courage to move. He ran at the man, kicking him where he was the weakest. Then he scooped up the rider's fallen pistol, leveling it at the drunken killer. Segovia, however, had only noticed the pain he was currently experiencing, not the boy who was aiming a gun at him. When he finally noticed, he swore, but seemed to find this not out of the ordinary, almost as if it had been inevitable. He put his hands over his brow and did an odd thing. He laughed.
"Híjole, I'm tired," he said.
Ben thought he might be faking, but as he approached, he saw Segovia's eyes weren't even open as he stood there. The man was stunned and smelled like sour vegetables and body odor. He put up no fight when Ben wrapped a rope around his arms and only grunted when he pulled it tight.
"¿Qué me haces?"
the drunk asked, still dazed. "Shh," Ben whispered, and the drunk said,
"Sorry."
Suddenly, the sound of crackling branches made Ben whirl around, sure the outlaw had an unseen partner. He raised the heavy pistol in that direction, uncertain if he could actually hit something. Perhaps he'd be no better a marksman than Segovia had been, or if it would be necessary to try. Maybe the gunplay had drawn the attention, wanted or unwanted, of someone nearby. But it was only Cook's huge, loyal horse, wandering into camp as if called. It was looking, with glistening black eyes, toward the dark shape on the desert floor, the shape that used to be its master and friend.
"Come here, Winchester," Ben said,
and the horse looked up at him. Ben said it again, and the horse obeyed. He led the drunken man to the big horse's side.
"Bonito," Segovia muttered,
and Ben said, "Yeah." He made Segovia lean over the saddle, urging him to stay still, and then wrapped him in rope as the man lay there, drunken and perplexed. Unable to see his hands in the fading light, Ben tied the ropes together. In their 3 days' traveling, Jerome Cook had only had time to teach Benny one or two things. But here he was, using one of them to its fullest potential. After 5 minutes, Ben had tied Segovia as tightly as he dared, and then some. The drunk had passed out, draped across the back of Winchester like a fallen antelope. Ben didn't know what to do with the rider's body, especially since he couldn't lift him, but he wrapped him up in the outlaw's bedroll and covered him with Segovia's blanket tent, which he weighed down with rocks. He wasn't sure if varmints would still get at the body or not, but he hoped it would be okay for a few hours. He left the mule where it was, thinking the noise it made could help him find this place again. When he came back to Segovia, the man had vomited all over Winchester's right side. He was moaning.
"Oh, muchacho," he said, trying to look up. "Kid, where are you?"
Ben said nothing. He threw a few sticks on Segovia's fire to maybe get a lay of the land, but didn't really know where he was. He walked with the horse back the way they came, looking for his own young mount. He saw something moving nearby and went to retrieve it, hoping it would turn out to be Pony and not a mountain lion. He got lucky. He patted Pony on the head and walked her to where the outlaw was trussed, tying a rope from his horse to his former mentor's, hoping the big horse would allow itself to be led by the small one.
"Kid, you tied me too tight," Segovia said when he heard him.
He really sounded in pain.
"My head hurts, and I have to make water."
"Sorry," Ben said, though he didn't mean it.
"Muchacho, if you'll untie me a little so I can drop my pants, I promise I won't run away."
Segovia was in a position where he could lift his head and look at the boy if he really strained himself. But in his condition, he didn't want to strain himself, and he spent most of the ride looking down at the ground.
"No,"
Ben said.
"Come on, kid. I'm a shot twice. How am I going to escape?"
"You're only shot once, senor,"
Ben said, getting astride his pony. It was very dark now, and would be until the moon came out. The town of Trueno wasn't far, but Ben knew he could miss it if he went too far in the wrong direction. He didn't know how to guide himself by the stars, and he surely wasn't going to ask Segovia for directions. He'd just have to trust his instincts and not let on that they might be lost. Winchester looked back at where Cook's body lay, perhaps wondering if he should wait for orders before leaving. But maybe the horse knew what the situation was and was looking back for completely different reasons.
"Look, I gotta wet the bushes,"
the outlaw said a minute later, only using a more vulgar term to say so.
"If you don't loosen these ropes, I'm gonna strangle."
"You'll strangle anyway."
Ben wasn't thinking when he said it, but he was glad he did.
"Damn it, kid," the drunk said. "I'm gonna spook this horse, and then it'll run on you."
Ben steeled himself.
"You do, and I'll have to shoot you."
"You wouldn't dare, kid. You're as scared as you are green."
"Go in your pants,"
Benny said, feeling angry and frustrated both. They rode back in the unknown direction in silence. Ben tried to keep alert, keep his focus on the land around him and the prisoner behind him. But his mind kept going back to the man at Segovia's camp, his one eye open and his mouth in the dirt. Every once in a while, the boy sniffled, the tears coming fast and unbidden from his eyes. He swallowed them down and concentrated on his writing until they went away. All at once, the big man began to whimper. Ben looked back, wondering how much pain he was in. But he was just making fun.
"Sure, I'm sorry I shot your daddy, kid," he said.
Ben didn't correct him.
He stroked Pony's head and searched the horizon for landmarks.
But these ropes are coming loose sooner or later. And when they do, I'm going to have to kill you for not untying me. Is that what you want?
That didn't make any sense, so Benny ignored him. Besides, if the outlaw really was wriggling free, why draw attention to it? An hour later, a large half moon was rising in the sky, which helped the boy orient himself. He thought he recognized a big rock formation as they neared it. But two rocks could have looked the same, couldn't they? A coyote howled somewhere in the distance. It was joined by another. A chilling, mournful sound. Then they both abruptly stopped and didn't come again. Ben didn't know how long they'd been riding when he saw the glow of a town way off to the east. The outlaw had been in and out of consciousness, and Ben did wonder if he might still be bleeding, and if so, how much. But it didn't matter, did it? Dead or alive, Jerome Cook had said. And it all came out to the same thing in a little border town like Tueno. Distance can be deceiving, and Ben rode on for an hour before identifying his destination. As they neared the outskirts of Tueno, Segovia began to get desperate, offering to pay the boy off, appealing to his mercy, telling him when they got to town nobody would listen to a kid and they'd untie Segovia and he'd slice open the boy.
"I'm sure they'll let you go after that," the boy said, but regretted it.
The outlaw knew Benny was listening now and began to threaten in earnest. Apparently, the man had been taught a wide assortment of torture techniques from Comanche Indians and would be able to teach them a thing or two when he was finished with the boy. Ben had the rider's pistol holstered to his belt, but considered drawing it and holding it on the man. He didn't, though. He didn't trust his ability to hang onto the pony if trouble appeared.
Hey there.
This is going to be a brief addendum. I hope you're enjoying listening to Birth of a Sidekick. I've shared it with a few people that seem to really like it, and that, you know, it's nice. I struggle, as you know. You know, it's not the same as somebody who has a health problem or somebody who's an alcoholic or whatever, but I do struggle with feelings of inadequacy, of worthlessness. And you know what? Maybe that is my cross to bear, so to speak, you know, whereas an alcoholic or a drug addict or a sexaholic or a douchebag would, you know, have other challenges in their life. But I appreciate the people who have said that they've enjoyed Birth of a Sidekick. In putting it together, you know, I have split it across three episodes, but I thought that it needed some kind of music at the very beginning. I don't know, just because that's something that you can do on a podcast that you can't really do on audible.com. Although I don't know what would happen if you did. There's this guy, Kevin MacLeod, and he runs Incompetech.com. Now, it has the worst website. It's worse than Dunesteef.com. That's how bad the name Incompetech is. Because what is the source of the word Incompetech? Well, it's a portmanteau, right? It's two different words. And one of them is technology. But the other one is not a good word. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Maybe it's memorable. It's not, but for some people, maybe it's memorable, and that's why he uses that name. But this guy seems to be a tremendously talented musician, and he puts out his music under a Creative Commons license. It might not even be a Creative Commons license. It's just a royalty-free license. I know that he gets donations and that he probably has thousands of people that use his music in the way that I'm using it here. But there was a piece just today. I was looking for something. I was editing together the very first Birth of a Sidekick episode, which you've already heard. And I was listening. I thought, I would like just some kind of music to sort of set the stage that I can put at the beginning of each episode. And there was a track called Americana. There had been others that claimed that they were Western influenced or whatever, and I listened to those and I didn't like them They didn't work for what I want. You know, it was country and Western. And that's sort of what I was going for. But when I heard Americana, it sounded like the big soaring John Barry Western music. Or, you know, whoever. I mean, you think of Ennio Morricone for spaghetti Westerns. But just there was a moment about 2 minutes in on Americana where I saw just like a huge plane and a guy riding a horse crossing the plane, and there it is. That's where we're going. This whole trip is almost done. And it started to soar. It was na 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 na, and you could hear the horns come in and the drums going. So it felt a little bit World War II-ish up to that point. It still sort of does. It sort of feels like John Williams' Hymn to the Fallen, whatever the Saving Private Ryan music was. But kind of the power of music, specifically music without words, is that it can conjure up different moods in different people, especially when you're just hearing music you know, untainted by images, untainted by a movie or a TV show or where you first saw it, heard it. And for me, yeah, like I said, there was this big vista. Maybe there were cows. Maybe there were just, you know, sagebrush. Maybe it was trees. It was just, it was exactly what I wanted Benny Parks to feel when he rides out of San Domingo's and, you know, his whole life is ahead of him. A million adventures are coming for Benny Parks. His life is just beginning now. And so, yeah, that's what I use. This soaring, building, just grandiose, triumphant music. Not triumphant necessarily, but just awe-inspiring, awe. The music of awe. Anyhow, that's what I got from this. And I thought, you know, I'm going to meet Big again. I might as well record something. Why don't I record just a tiny bit about this guy's music? He lets people have it, as clear as I can tell, for free. I have tried to put in an acknowledgement to the guy. I asked Sir Fake Sean Connery if he would do it, and he made fun of the guy's last name. But it's really neat that somebody could have the amount of talent that this guy seems to have and give it away. And, you know, maybe we're like that too. If you guys think that we're talented or we're funny or we're gifted or we're engaging. Gosh, I'd like somebody to say you're engaging. And yet, you know, we're not being paid for the podcasts that we do. I'm not being paid for the Rish Outcast. Passion fuels it. A desire to express myself, to be an individual, to stand out from the pack, to have somebody say, hey, look at that guy. That guy has something to offer. He's not worthless. The music changes the story in a way. I don't know. I mean, because if I had put like really sad music there, or if I had put like the Gunsmoke theme or you know, something like that, a call to adventure, the story would feel very different. And so choosing this one, I don't want to say that it's melancholy, but there is something a little bit sad about it. And you know what? The story is a little bit sad, right? There was a kid at San Domingo's who was born with no legs. And he wished, you know, he wished that somehow there was a miracle and that the lean rider would pick him. That the lean rider would say, I don't care that you can't walk. I'll put you on a horse. I'll put you on my horse. And I'm going to take you away from all this. And I'm going to let you know that you're special despite your handicap. All of those boys longed to feel special. to have somebody acknowledge that. That's something that we all share. I'm saying we all. I feel that way. Please notice me. Please acknowledge that I have something to contribute. Please take me away from this orphanage. And people have asked, are there going to be more of these stories? And so far, no, but I've begun thinking about it. Wouldn't it be neat if Benny Parks gets another opportunity to do good, to have another adventure, to make a difference, to show the Lean Rider that it was not a mistake to pick him? So I'm not saying that for sure there will be another one, but I'm saying that I am thinking about it. So there you are. Should I put this at the end of the second one or the end of the third one? Because if it's at the end of the third one, you already know how it ended. Huh. Well, you already know because you've just heard this. Thank you once again for listening to it, for the nice comments that you've made. If you would like to go out there and buy it, that's great. But if not, no. But more important is to let me know that you liked it and that you would like more. I wrote a story for a guy who commented on my blog once. He had enjoyed some little point that I had been making in a blog. It was one of the blogs I was doing about San Diego Comic-Con. And so it's just like, hey, thank you, guy. I'm going to write a story. And the story got away from me. It started to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I came up with the idea of, well, I could publish these on the Doonstief. We could do one every single year because it became a series. It got so big, you know? And I never shared those with anybody. That story never went anywhere. As far as I know, it's still in the notebook, still untyped. But my dream was to put out one of those and have people go, hey, that was good stuff. Once again, you're special. You're not worthless. When's the next one coming? Thus, encouraging me to write the next one or to share the next one or whatever. So I'm saying that, yeah, okay, money is nice, but to know that people dug it is nicer. I also didn't have the opportunity. Okay, you know what? I'm going to put this at the end of the third episode. I want to thank Marshall Latham. He really dug the story. And I think he asked me, hey, if you ever do an audio version of this, or you said you were going to do an audio version of this, I'd like to voice the sheriff. And I was like, oh, shoot, you know, I've already recorded it. I've already edited it. It's out for sale. But I'm going to do it on the Rish Outcast. If you really want to be the sheriff, do those lines and I will incorporate them into the story. And so Marshall Latham is our special guest star as the sheriff in this story. Marshall's a good guy. And he's been very generous in helping us with our show and being a big supporter of the things that we do. And you know, I appreciate that he read this story. You can't read the story for free. You guys are the first ones getting it for free. So he had to have put down some money to read Birth of a Sidekick. And that means something to me. So thank you to him. And thank you to you. And enjoy. I won't sit
down and I won't shut up. The music in this episode was created by Kevin MacLeod, whose shenanigans can be found over at incompetech.com. The Rish Outcast just happens to be produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. I don't really know what that means, and I'm betting that you don't either. Have a nice night.